Sitting down with a United States president? This is a big deal. It's a matter of life and death, regime preservation.
Trump and Kim arrive in Singapore for historic talks. It's Monday, June 11th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, VOA is in Singapore as we find out what's happening ahead of the summit. Implications loom as a result of the talks. Education for Pakistan's poor. Ghost fishing nets. Freeing your life from smartphones. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump is in Singapore for his upcoming summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, a meeting the U.S. leader says he's feeling very good about. Ahead of his arrival, Trump acknowledged he is heading into unknown territory for the meeting Tuesday. In response to a question from VOA News just before heading to Asia from the Group of Seven summit in Canada, Trump said, "I really feel confident about the unprecedented encounter between a sitting American president and a member of the family dynasty which has maintained iron fist control over one of the world's most reclusive countries for three generations." Trump added he believes Kim wants to do something great for his people, but Trump cautioned that Kim won't have that opportunity again if the talks do not go well, describing this opportunity for diplomacy with the United States as a, quote, one-time shot. VOA Asia's Ira Melman dives deeper into the summit implications with Sung-Yoon Lee, professor of Korean studies at the Fletcher School at Tufts University in Boston.
The two men, Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump, have arrived, of course, in Singapore, a third country, like two prize fighters visiting a third country for a massive heavyweight bout. Now, I see that President Trump's comment that if the talks don't proceed to his liking, he'll just get up and leave as posturing. I don't think the president can afford to do that, even if he finds the conversation, the negotiation with Kim Jong-un quite disagreeable, because it would be disastrous PR for the U.S. government, for the United States as a whole. Trump will come across as petty, as petulant, as the troublemaker, and Kim, the peacemaker. So I don't think it was an ingenuous comment. I think it's posturing, trying to put some pressure on North Korea. At the same time, it's been reported that Kim Jong-un is scheduled to take off from Singapore on the day of the summit at 2 p.m. The two are to sit down at 9 a.m. And of course, there's some travel time getting to the airport and so forth. So Kim is posturing, I would say, at a higher level, basically telling Trump, oh, I'm going to give you all of 3 hours. And President Trump has said that he would be able to size up Kim Jong-un in the first minute using his gut or his feel and touch. This is very concerning because, once again, I think President Trump assumes that he can tame the North Korean dictator by virtue of his long background in business, by virtue of his intelligence and charisma. And that shows you what President Trump felt in calling Kim last year a rocket man, little rocket man, sick puppy, maniac, madman. Kim may be all of those things, but he is very crafty. And whereas President Trump said, I've been preparing for this moment all my life, Kim literally has. As bizarre and weird as he comes across to us in the United States and in normal countries, the Kim royal family, it's no joke for them. Sitting down with a United States president, this is a big deal. It's a matter of life and death, regime preservation. And Kim has been groomed since he was a child as heir, and he has been preparing for this. And there are playbooks, of course, scripts, strategies, perfected by his father and his grandfather going back to the 1960s and 70s when North Korea was able to put tremendous pressure on the United States during the Vietnam War by attacking Americans, shooting down a U.S. plane in 1969, killing 31 U.S. servicemen, and not paying any kind of price for that kind of lethal attack. So North Korea knows just how far to push the envelope, and it also knows how to negotiate with the United States.
President Trump and Mr. Kim are scheduled to meet at 9 a.m. Tuesday. Stay with VOA Asia for more on this summit in just a moment. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Trump feeling very good about upcoming summit with Kim. Trump says meeting with Kim, one-time shot for North Korea. Iran, spurned by United States, angrily washes Trump-North Korea talks. President Xi takes swipe at G7 summit in SCO remarks. Historic laws bring indigenous treaty in Australia one step closer. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. VOA correspondent Bill Gallo has been in Singapore for several days. He now shares his observations with VOA Asia's Ira Melman, beginning with what we don't know about Kim Jong-un's activities while in Singapore.
Well, yesterday he arrived here, and there was a lot of secrecy involved. You know, we didn't know how he was going to get here. He came in on a Chinese 747, an Air China plane. He then went to his luxurious hotel in Singapore in a Mercedes-Benz limousine with blacked-out windows. You couldn't see anything of him at all. He then actually met with the Singapore Prime Minister. Didn't really say much at all, but they had that meeting. He did express optimism. The Singapore Prime Minister later relayed that Kim expressed optimism about the talks. But, you know, what is he doing tomorrow? Is he going to be involved in talks with U.S. officials? We don't really know. Obviously, there's not a lot of transparency when it comes to what North Korean leaders are doing.
What is the overall tone? What is the security presence throughout Singapore?
You would think that the security presence on the street would actually be more visible than it is, but this is a place that relies heavily on surveillance rather than actually, you know, a heavy-handed kind of police presence. I mean, there are just surveillance cameras everywhere. It's shocking sometimes how little visible police presence there is on the streets here.
Do you get a feeling of the tone of the city? Is it any different, or is there expectation? Is there any kind of excitement about this? How do you gauge that?
Honestly, it's sort of a spectacle, to be completely honest with you. I think a lot of people here joke around about it. They've come up with, like, you know, Donald Trump hamburgers and Kim Jong-un cocktails. There is a Kim Jong-un impersonator who's making his way around town. He was actually brought in by the Singapore authorities and warned not to go to any of the summit events. And there's also a Donald Trump impersonator. Trump-Kim branding is on a lot of things here. It's on water bottles. It's a real event, and Singapore is really playing it up.
Has there been any presence or talk about the only person who's maybe in town, at least who is an American, who has talked to both leaders, Dennis Rodman?
No. We've tried to get a hold of him, and he hasn't really said much since he's been there. No, we haven't. And it's interesting. Will he actually play a role in this? I mean, you know, it's sort of a joke of a thing in a way, but I don't know. We can't tell, but there's always a chance that he does play some role in this.
VOA correspondent Bill Gallo in Singapore. Happening now in Asia, the Australian state of Victoria has taken the first official step towards signing a treaty with its Aboriginal peoples. It is the first time any Australian parliament has passed laws that commit to a future accord with Indigenous groups. Aboriginal leaders hope a treaty will deliver political and economic benefits. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're starting out your week with us here at VOA Asia. Who will have the upper hand in the U.S.-North Korea talks tomorrow, and what is at stake for President Trump and Mr. Kim? We continue the discussion between VOA Asia's Ira Melman and Sung-Yoon Lee, professor of Korean studies at the Fletcher School at Tufts University in Boston.
Each party will put on a good face, and both the U.S. and North Korea will claim victory. North Korea will be able to sell it as having tamed the mighty United States, as having compel the United States to lift sanctions or at the very least to stop enforcing sanctions, which will give momentum to China and South Korea to return to the heady old days of giving North Korea close to $1 billion a year by each country, by China and South Korea. And President Trump will be able to sell it as a victory for himself, that he has tamed the North Korean leader, that he has de-escalated, diffused this tense standoff, and so on. But in reality, North Korea will walk away, Kim Jong-un will walk away with far greater gains, because his ultimate aim is to buy time and money with which to perfect his own nuclear posture review. And having ensnared the United States, having trapped President Trump into an endless process of negotiations, protracted negotiation process rather than a final resolution, Kim will be calling the shots. If President Trump in the next, let's say, 6 months grows tired that North Korea is not delivering on its commitment or even in blatant violation, what will Trump do in the face of Kim Jong-un saying, come on, let's talk again, let's have another meeting, I'll come to the UN General Assembly and speak there, please invite me to the White House, and oh, please come to North Korea anytime? Then it will be very difficult politically for President Trump to walk away from a deal that he himself has endorsed in Singapore.
Does this open up the possibility of military action against North Korea by the United States or anyone else?
One cannot rule it out, but it's highly unlikely. And of course, history is a guide. History doesn't necessarily mean that everything, the status quo, will remain the same forever. But since the end of the Korean War 65 years ago, at no point has the United States or South Korea retaliated, used military force in the face of countless North Korean attacks, lethal attacks included. So it's just poor policy for the U.S. to start a war against a country like North Korea, which repeatedly has shown its capability and intention to shoot back. Unlike other countries, unlike Afghanistan or Syria or Iraq or Libya, North Korea has the will and the means to inflict heavy casualties on its adversary, and I think the U.S. doesn't want to go there.
How much of a possibility is that that you might be wrong about this, that there might be a chance that the North Korean leader is ready to give up his nuclear arsenal in exchange for promises, in exchange for respect, in exchange for money?
Well, I hope I'm wrong, and it would be foolhardy to say I'm certain that I am right. But when you think of the basic question, why are Trump and Kim meeting to talk about trade, barriers, tariff, fish quota? No, nuclear diplomacy. This is international politics played at the highest level, short of waging war or suing for peace in the middle of war. It's serious business. Human lives are at stake here. And a country like North Korea that's spent half a century, 50 years, in trying to develop and advance its nuclear capability is exceedingly unlikely to give it up. One does not presume, with respect to the eight other nuclear nations in the world, the permanent members of the UN Security Council and India, Pakistan, and Israel, that it would be possible through artful nuclear diplomacy to get any of those countries to give it up. But when it comes to tying it back with North Korea, people still harbor that hope, that illusion, in my opinion, because North Korea is so backward and doesn't have much money and so on. But I would say, for the very same reasons, North Korea will never give it up unless it is presented with the specter of regime extinction. Because, for one, North Korea has to contend with a far more successful, richer, freer Korean state across the border, and military power, menacing capability is all that North Korea has. In the past, I've observed, dating back to Kim the First, Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il, North Koreans are very good at putting on a scripted, highly choreographed, but seemingly impromptu dramatic act, pulling a stunt, in other words. So in the next few hours, I guess, when it's daytime in Singapore, if Kim Jong-un all of a sudden invites Trump to play a round of golf at Sentosa Country Club, which is a very nice golf course, what would President Trump say or do? Oh, no, I don't have time. I'm too busy prepping for my meeting with you. No, he'll be sucked right into it. And Kim will be able to dictate the terms of the conversation, and he will ride that momentum into the actual negotiation the following day. And Kim Jong-un may even, after a long work day, have a beer in the hotel bar with his good friend, Dennis Rodman. Why? Just to show the world that he is in charge, that he's the boss, that he is confident and relaxed. North Korea is very good at these things.
Our thanks to Sungyoon Lee, professor of Korean studies at the Fletcher School at Tufts University in Boston, for those insights of the upcoming summit. There's much more on our Facebook page at VOA Asia, and be sure to join us tomorrow as the historic summit happens in Singapore. Coming up, education for Pakistan's poor. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia: Kim Jong-un on Sunday strayed further from his North Korean home than he has at any other time since taking power in 2011. The North Korean leader arrived in Singapore midday Sunday, flying on a Chinese jet. Kim on Tuesday is set to meet U.S. President Donald Trump in their historic summit. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for the latest on the summit and other developments. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Ala Bukshbalak, who was born disabled, teaches children in a poor neighborhood of Karachi, Pakistan, that lacks basic services. He teaches at a school that was founded by a Karachi University student that is tuition-free and is aimed at educating girls from the area who would otherwise have no educational opportunities. Cheyenne Salim in Karachi filed this report for VOA. It's narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
Born disabled, Ala Baksh never let his disability define who he is. His love of education drives him every day to teach children at the local Tikri Education Center.
I teach English here, but I really enjoy teaching math as well.
A recent high school graduate, Ala Baksh doesn't want his education to stop there.
I just graduated from high school with really good grades, and my plan is to eventually get my PhD so that I can bring change to our community that is behind in so many ways, and I want to see kids get educated here.
The Tikri Education Center was founded by Ghanwar Shafi and her brothers in 2013. Ghanwar, a Karachi University student, says old traditions have hindered girls from attending school.
Girls were not allowed to go to school, but now, because of this center, we have more than 30 girls who come here to study. We don't charge tuition here, and we even provide books to the children.
And the female students appreciate it.
Before coming to the center, I had no idea what a college or university was. I never knew the difference between science and art. I want to become a doctor and open a free clinic here. I also will be teaching science here in the center.
Before the center, all we knew was that I would study till fifth grade and just do daily tests at home, like cleaning after that. But now we know the value of education.
Despite the lack of basic services or any government or non-government assistance, Ala Baksh and Ghanwar Shafi are doing everything they can to foster education in this area. For Cheyenne Salim in Karachi, Pakistan, this is Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia: the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is holding its first summit since India and Pakistan joined the bloc, which is widely seen by observers as a means for blocking American influence in Central Asia. The summit is being held in the eastern Chinese coastal city of Qingdao. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, some 640,000 tons of lost fishing gear pollute the world's oceans. That's according to the United Nations. Slow to break down, these so-called ghost nets take a huge toll on sea creatures, from tiny sponges to dolphins, turtles, and whales. VOA's Steve Barragona tells us a group of volunteer divers is working to clean up sea floors and draw attention to the damage these ghost nets do.
Lost or abandoned fishing gear litters reefs and seafloors worldwide, making up 10% of ocean trash. The divers group Aegean Rebreath is working to clean up the waters off the coast of Greece. George Saralakos is a member.
The truth is that the problem is extensive. Let me just say that in this two-day activity we carried out, the nets we collected covered entire surfaces on reefs. It's not by chance that we found many live organisms trapped in these nets. So we understand what it means to have an extensive net on the seabed.
On a tip from a local fisherman, Aegean Rebreath divers removed this net from a seabed near a boat mooring. They hauled it to the dock and cut loose as many trapped starfish and crustaceans as they could. Former fisherman Vangelis Roussos says fishers don't want to lose their gear.
There are reefs in the sea. You throw a net into the water, there are things the nets can stick on or get caught in, and you won't be able to bring them up. That's what happens. The fisherman doesn't throw his nets away in the sea because he's paid for it.
But the damage from lost gear can be long-lasting, says Hellenic Center for Marine Research scientist Maria Salamidi.
The problem is that this net doesn't decompose, as they are very strong nylon nets and they don't decompose easily. They can remain there for hundreds of years and continue fishing. The fish continue to get trapped. Fish, crustaceans, lobsters, crabs, anything, get tangled in these nets. As they get entangled, they become bait for other fish.
The United Nations is working on guidelines for marking gear so discarded nets can be traced back to their owners. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Experts are warning that spending too much time with smartphones is eroding our family and social life. The world's biggest smartphone manufacturer is Apple, and has heard that warning and has announced new features for iPhones that will help people get back their lives. At its annual conference last week in San Jose, California, Apple also unveiled a host of small improvements, including a bit of augmented reality. VOA's George Pudich taps the report icon for details.
And today,
control of the time spent on the iPhone will come in the form of an app called Screen Time. Apple's chief of software development, Craig Federighi, says the Do Not Disturb feature will let users disconnect from cyberspace.
It's really detailed. You get deep insight on how much time you're spending, where you're spending it, and even how your use breaks down during the day.
It's a digital well-being initiative, says Brian Blau of the research company Gartner.
What that means is Apple's recognized, I think, through some pressure in the industry, that people can get addicted to their smartphones and their mobile technology.
Parents will be able to limit the time their children spend on apps such as Instagram. But Apple still wants to keep iPhone users happy, so it's also adding a host of small features, ranging from a way to insert selfies into a document,
hey everybody,
to a group FaceTime, allowing simultaneous video chat with up to 32 participants, and a walkie-talkie feature, which lets you talk instantly with another person using the same app. On top of all that, there's a bit of augmented reality. For instance, it will be possible to measure objects directly on the screen.
That means you're going to be able to hold your smartphone up and get information about the world around you, exactly where you're standing at and what you're looking at.
The new software will be available this autumn, and surprisingly, it will be compatible with older devices back to iPhone 6. George Pudich, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. One of the best uses for your smartphone is to listen to us on your phone. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can stream us on VOA Asia Facebook. And you can also hear us on great radio stations like Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Zineb Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.